Welcome to The Markets, Dateline Chicago, Friday, September 4th, going into a three-day holiday weekend. I'm Orion Samuelson, and we'll take a look at what happened on Wall Street, feedlots, grain fields, and whatever else in the marketplace. Is always interesting because we can blame a lot of the activity on the pandemic and its impact on markets from all of those places. So starting with today, the August non-farm payrolls rose less than expected. And the NASDAQ closed lower today, though well above its session low as selling eased late in the day after investors dumped some heavyweight technology stocks due to concerns about high valuations and a still patchy economic recovery. Major indices regained some ground in late afternoon, and trading was still volatile. But at its lowest point of the day, the tech-heavy NASDAQ fell as much as 9.9% from its record high reached on Wednesday. And the S&P 500 briefly dipped below its pre-crisis record reached back in February, although it too closed well off session lows. Mega cap companies such as Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, and Facebook also cut losses, though of that group, only Apple managed a very tiny gain for the day. The analysts who take a look at what happens on an hourly or a minute basis, one of them said you had a significant sell-off Thursday, some followed through in the morning on Friday, and then we stabilized. The selling was pretty fierce. Corrections like this have been quick and severe lately, and one analyst said, we don't know if it's over. The fact we stabilized today could be a good sign. While Thursday's sell-off already reflected investor fears that valuations for the NASDAQ high flyers had overheated, the worries were exacerbated on Friday by the Financial Times and others reporting that options trading by Japan's SoftBank had inflated these stocks. One analyst said, we've started to see signs of weakness in the last few days, notably yesterday, and then you get a headline like the FT story, and that really adds fuel to the fire on the downside. The NASDAQ had powered the stock market's stellar recovery from the coronavirus-led crash, climbing as much as 82% from lows that were hit in March. And earlier on Friday, the Labor Department's closely watched employment report showed the jobless rate improved to 8.4% from 10.2% in July. But one analyst said it wasn't wonderful enough to get the market excited enough that we don't need any more stimulus. And so for the day, the Dow Industrial Average down 159 points, a little more than 0.5%, closing at 28,133. The S&P 500 Index lost 28 points to 3,426, and the NASDAQ Composite dropped 145 points. That's about 1.25% to close at 11,313. The communication services, consumer discretionary, and technology indices posted Friday's steepest percentage decline among the 11 major S&P sectors. Also, the 1500 airline sub-index rose a little bit today. That it was up 1.85% for the day. For the week, the S&P 500 fell 2.33 points after five consecutive weeks of gains. The Dow dropped 1.82% for the week, and the NASDAQ lost 3.25% for the week and clocked its biggest two-day drop since March 17 between Thursday and Friday. Oh, and the fear gauge, the VIX, hit a more than 11-week high in late morning trading, but it ended the day lower and Broadcom gained 3% after the Apple supplier forecast fourth quarter revenue above analyst estimates. And so for the day, we ended lower, but sort of a mixed close for the week. Looking at the global markets today, a gauge of global stocks fell for a second straight day today and marked the biggest weekly percentage drop in nearly 3 months, while the dollar ran out of steam, ending a three-day run higher after the U.S. payrolls report painted a weaker economic picture. And U.S. job growth slowed in August as financial aid from the government was depleted, non-farm payrolls increasing by 1,371,000 jobs versus 1,734,000 the previous month. Price of oil. Oil prices fell more than 3% today and posted their biggest weekly decline since June as fears of a slow economic recovery from the you-know-what pandemic compounded worries about weak oil demand. Brent crude, the international benchmark, fell $1.41 a barrel. That's 3.2% to settle at $42.66 a barrel. And U.S. crude fell $1.60 or nearly 4% to settle at $39.77 a barrel. And the industry is a little concerned about the declining demand for fuel and the less driving that we're doing in this country. So it'll be interesting to see how much driving we pile up over this Labor Day weekend. And then what do we look for next week? Well, on Monday, of course, the markets in Canada and the United States are closed. So there'll be no action with reports or any other activity in North America. Federal Reserve on Tuesday will report data on outstanding credit extended to American consumers. Consumer credit likely to have increased to $13.75 billion in June. That would be from $8.95 billion in the previous month. And the Labor Department, well, expected to show on Friday, the Consumer Price Index likely increased 0.3% in August. And excluding the volatile food and energy components, CPI probably increased 0.2% in August. The job openings and labor turnover survey, or JOLTS as it's known, report for July is scheduled for release on Wednesday. Also on Wednesday, American Eagle Outfitters is set to post second quarter revenue. The teen apparel retailer taking a hit from lockdown-induced store closures. However, investors will be on the lookout for a surge in online sales at its athleisure brand, Aerie. The Government Council of the European Central Bank will hold its monetary policy meeting in Frankfurt on Thursday, and they'll hold a press conference to explain the outcome of that meeting. The Bank of Canada will announce its interest rate decision on Wednesday. The central bank expected to keep its rates unchanged at 0.25%. Other significant companies reporting second quarter results during the week include Lululemon Athletica on Tuesday, GameStop Corporation on Wednesday, and the Kroger Company on Friday. And Oracle Corporation's first quarter earnings are also scheduled for release on Thursday. So that's what we're going to be looking at next week. But again, I remind you, it's a four-day trading week. The markets will be closed on Monday in observance of Labor Day. The agricultural scene will be a little quieter next week as well, and we'll get a discussion on the agricultural scene with Mike Pearson talking to Sue Martin of Ag Investment Service, and that will come when we continue on the market.
Joining us this week is Sue Martin from Ag and Investment Services out of Clarion, Iowa. Sue, thanks for taking the time to chat with us this week.
Oh, I'd love it.
Well, I tell you what, we are getting down to the final stretch on this new crop, corn and soybeans out in the field. Has the market come to a consensus on yield, in your opinion, Sue, on this corn crop?
I think the market is still searching. I think after the derecho storm and the drought kept getting worse and encompassing more area, I think that the trade started to realize that probably NAS will lower the yield here in this September 11th report. Mm-hmm. But they know it's going to be less. It's a matter of how much less. Probably the one thing that I would have to say we were blessed in this year was coming into the spring with good subsoil moisture, and I think that might be a saving grace for this crop.
You know, I think you're exactly right. I saw a post on Facebook. Guy did a root pit. Roots were down 9, almost 10 feet because they were able to follow that moisture down.
Yes.
But that does make estimating yield that much harder for traders and farmers.
It does. You know, we're in an area where we're very dry. In June, we had an inch and I think about an inch and 3/10. In July, 3/4 of an inch. Here in August, between two different rains, an inch and a quarter. And I went out into our cornfields and looked at ears, and I was surprised, very little tip back, and the kernel depth is nice. Now, maybe not, didn't see any 18 rows around, all 16 rows, but the kernel was nice and, of course, dented now and coming home very quickly.
It is, and growers are watching these markets. We're seeing some volatility. We're seeing some movement to the upside, at least against earlier pressures from earlier this year. When should folks be looking at pulling the trigger? What price targets do you have in mind on new crop corn?
Well, I think here's some interesting things. First off, on new crop corn, we had an outside range month in August, both in beans and corn. And we got to a wave count projection of wave one, which you always go right to the penny pretty much on those. And that was 364 and a quarter. And now we're getting a little correction from that, which we should. 380 and a half is the next projection. The question mark will be, do we go for a wave three? That is 411. And here's the interesting thing. January high on December corn is 404 and three quarters. I went back to 1969 and took every year to see how many times did we not exceed that January high. Mm-hmm. There were only 4 years. And, of course, two of them, 1985, 86, that was a recession, farm recession, not anyone else, but agriculture. And then the next one was the year of 2001. And I think you maybe were coming off the cusp of a currency problem around the world and situation. And then the next one was 2013, mm-hmm. coming after the drought of 2012. You know, stocks increased, carryouts increased, and the market had a more of a negative tone. So the question mark is this year, okay, you've got the COVID-19 kind of creating the economy to slow a little bit, but you also have the weather on the other hand kind of creating a situation. I think what this year does is it sets the stage for next year's weather to be very important.
On the soybean side, we're dealing with that same drought. We're kind of running out of gas as the season comes to an end. What are your price targets here for growers as they're looking at a bean field that they're not quite sure what it's going to yield?
Well, I think that for soybeans, we have to keep in mind we've already made a higher high this year than last year. We did that in January. But I do think that the bean market's trying to come back up to test that high, which is 982 and three quarters. We've done wave counts in a smaller count on if we took it on a daily. Those have been fulfilled. Now we're moving into a weekly, which spreads your projections out. 954 and a half was a wave two. And those tend to give you a little chatter. So the market will bounce around in here, chop a little bit. And then as we get into the government report, we'll see the quarterly stocks is what's going to probably be more of a market mover at the end of the month. But I would have to say coming up around 993, 1013, 1019, extreme, and I mean extreme, 1040. But we're going to have to see continued good Chinese buying, which I think we will. China's been hitting various places around the world, setting up deals to be able to move nicely, to be able to keep grain moving into them. And I think that we will also see that China is doing a very aggressive campaign of buying beans out of Brazil. They're even working into 2022. Mm. And that's pretty interesting that when you see farmers so aggressively sold, which I think is a good thing for our farmers, to have Brazil getting oversold or aggressively sold. They're, you know, they're moving into La Nina, starting off with a dry season planting. Things may not go as well for them as they have been. But I think that if we can get some drop in yield, I don't see beans dropping as aggressively as probably corn. Traders have this attitude, you know, you can't fix corn when damage is done, but soybeans you could. But there's a lot of bean fields turning, and once they turn or start that turn, you aren't going to fix the yield too much.
That's true. Now, you mentioned Chinese purchases. We've seen China making a lot of purchases recently, yes, both of corn and of soybeans. They've been continuing their buying, as well as pork. When you look at the pork market, Sue, we've been down in the dumps here since COVID hit. Is there a light at the end of this tunnel, do you think?
Well, I think there is. My opinion's not a popular one right now. I believe that the hog market probably has put a low in here for a while. And while we do have abundant numbers, no doubt, I think China's buying is becoming more aggressive with pork. They have food inflation that's quite high. I think that when I look at our numbers of pigs that were aborted or, you know, euthanized, I think that our numbers, they'll still be decent come fall. You know, October's pork month. Mm-hmm. But I do believe when I look at a monthly chart on the hogs, October's especially, I find that in going all the way back to 1971, when you take out the lower Bollinger Bands on the monthly chart, you'll turn around and congest and start to move back towards the 20-month moving average, which is $60.
All right. Well, something to keep an eye on there in the hog market. Well, Sue Martin, Ag and Investment Services, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thank you.
Next week, we'll be doing something we've never done before. We'll conduct the Farm Progress Show and Husker Harvest Days virtually. In other words, there'll not be a couple hundred thousand people on the Farm Progress Show grounds because Max Armstrong and our television crew have already been there for the past week or so, taking care of the virtual presentations that will be made during the Farm Progress Show and Husker Harvest Days. They're combining the two shows for this virtual presentation, and you'll have the opportunity to participate either virtually or if you're on the grounds, and there won't be many of you because of the COVID-19 situation. But Max Armstrong, as I said, has been there with our crew and putting together the features that you would see, but we'll maybe see a little bit better because of the use of drones and the other technical equipment. And so let's find out a little bit more about what you can expect. And for that, I've called in my buddy Max Armstrong because we've gone to a lot of shows together. So, Max, I guess we'll do some reminiscing, but also some unusual presentations in this year's Farm Progress Show.
Well, Orion, this week as we were at Boone, Iowa, doing the video recording for the Farm Progress virtual experience that'll be coming up September 15th, 16th, and 17th, I was doing a little reminiscing of when you and I had been on stage together at the Rio Farm Progress Show, and I have some photographs of this. Many years ago, you could see the DeKalb winged ear in the background as they sponsored our involvement at the Farm Progress Show. Well, this year, DeKalb Asgrow will be a part of the virtual experience, too, as we hear from Colin Pennington. Colin is the Marketing Communications Manager for DeKalb Asgrow, joining us here this morning.
You bet, Max. And we're really looking forward to, you know, tackling this event and what has become the new normal for so many of us in a virtual experience, and excited to be part of the first virtual Farm Progress experience. And from a DeKalb and Asgrow perspective, launching what we call Chasing the Dream. And that's really an online opportunity for folks to visit, whether it be your desktop computer or mobile phone, iPhone, tablet, and really continue to get some of the same agronomic updates, product updates from the DeKalb and Asgrow brands as we head into this harvest season and start thinking about 2021. But also experience content in a new and different way and have a little bit of fun with it as we kind of tie into that baseball theme, and obviously knowing that as we would have been coming to Boone this year and Major League Baseball would have been playing a game at the Field of Dreams movie site in Dyersville, we really embraced the opportunity to do something unique and different. And while we certainly are disappointed we can't all be there together in person, I think the virtual experience will be a lot of fun for everybody as we head into trying this out for the first time.
Am I correct in my understanding there'll be the opportunity to participate in live chats? In other words, as a grower, if you have some questions, you can get them answered right there.
Yep, absolutely. So, you know, what we mean when we say virtual, it doesn't mean we have to give up some of that live experience. And so we've got a great opportunity for some of our technical agronomists from around the region. We'll spend a couple of hours each day live on the platform, whether it be via video or just via keyboard, you know, covering some of the key topics and also answering some of the key questions from growers, as we really want to make sure that, you know, despite some of the challenges that we have and being able to get together in some of the larger group settings like we typically would, that we've still got an opportunity for folks to get their questions answered and, you know, really digest some of the things that have happened this season, especially when you think about we face challenges every year, and 2020 clearly is no different. And so just want to be sure that folks have an outlet to ask those questions if they're not doing it already with their local teams, and give them an opportunity to find the solutions that are going to work for them.
Yeah, you can register starting Tuesday, fps2020experience.dekalbasgrow.com. Thanks, Colin.
Thanks, Max.
Colin Pennington there joining us, the DeKalb Asgrow Marketing Communications Manager. Let me give you that URL one more time, fps2020experience.dekalbasgrow.com.
Well, as you heard, it's going to be a different experience for all of us at the Outdoor Farm Show activity starting next week, with the Farm Progress Show and Husker Harvest Days being boiled into one event for our virtual presentation. And there's nothing like visiting with your friends that maybe you see once a year or twice a year, but this year you won't get to see them at the Farm Progress Show or Husker Harvest Days or the other outdoor shows that have had to be done virtually because of, you know what, the pandemic. So we'll be there, and you'll see what we do, but you'll see it via video. Some of the specialists with the exhibitors will be there on stage, but not in the size crowd that we've been accustomed to at shows in the past because of the COVID-19 pandemic. But Max Armstrong will be on the grounds, so he'll look forward to seeing those of you who are. Meanwhile, I'll be in the studio doing the work that I would normally do on stage at the Farm Progress Show. So quite a year ahead of us, and it's going to be interesting for all of us. I hope that you will find the virtual show well done, and the opportunity to still ask questions maybe by email after the shows are over. Because the nice thing is the videos that are being shot at the showgrounds before the event starts will be available for a month or two by video, so you can see it. So that's what we're looking forward to. Some fear about it, but we'll make it work. As we take a look at the trade this week in the grain market, we have to talk about China, because increasing Chinese demand lifted soybean futures to their highest prices in more than 2 years today, while corn futures rose on concerns about U.S. crop damage from adverse weather, the hurricanes, the tornadoes, the wildfires, and the derecho that moved through the Midwest, particularly Iowa. So those are some of the activities that we have to look at, and that's why we're glad to see that China is still buying. The U.S. Department of Agriculture said private exporters sold 318,000 tons of U.S. soybeans to China and 175,000 tons of soybean meal to the Philippines. That's all for delivery in the 2020-21 marketing year, which started on the 1st of September. But that report today from the USDA reported that China, the world's top soybean importer, had booked U.S. cargoes, which is hoping to alleviate the concerns they have about food security in China. And that's why they've been not only a buyer of soybeans, but a buyer of U.S. corn and pork more recently. But the most active soybean futures contract at the Board of Trade settled 2 cents higher today, $69.68 a barrel. Contract earlier touched its highest price since June of 2018 at $9.69.5. Corn rose 4.25 cents today to end at $3.58 a bushel, and wheat slid 3 cents to settle at $5.50 and a quarter cents per bushel. The contract touched its lowest price since August 27, after reaching its highest price since April 1st on Tuesday of this week. And price movements, of course, were limited ahead of the 3-day Labor Day weekend. Traders are waiting for the USDA's report on September 11th to issue the monthly supply and demand forecasts, and maybe we'll get a better handle then on how much loss we are going to suffer in the Midwest and that August windstorm in Iowa. So as we look at closing prices, that we'll start with trade on Tuesday. September wheat down 2 cents a bushel today at 5.41 1/4. September corn up 2.5 cents at 3.47 cents a bushel. And the September soybean contract ended up 1.75 cents at $9.69.5 a bushel. And then we go to the livestock trade at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. And there, too, strong export demand for U.S. pork pushed lean hog futures to a 4-month high. Traders are optimistic that China, the world's biggest pork consumer, will remain a strong buyer after the USDA reported strong weekly export sales today. Chinese importers have been bringing in huge volumes of meat to fill a domestic supply shortage created by the African swine fever that killed millions of pigs in China. One analyst, Don Roos, president of Iowa-based broker U.S. Commodities, said the hogs have been on a big run. Chinese demand should be strong through the end of the year, according to Dan Hallstrom, president of the industry group U.S. Meat Export Federation. United States exported 69,793 tons of U.S. pork to China in July, and that's up from 60,453 tons a year earlier. Profit margins for meat packers today were $54.35 per hog. That's up from $46.80 a week ago. Roos said the packers are bidding up for hogs because domestic demand has been very strong. And traders remain uncertain about U.S. demand for beef after the summer grilling season will come to an end this weekend. Closures of restaurants, school cafeterias, and event spaces like hotel ballrooms due to the COVID-19 pandemic are making demand more uncertain. But October live cattle futures ended today at $104.45 a pound. So have a good Labor Day weekend. Make it safe. You be safe. And look out for that COVID-19 bug that keeps floating around, interfering with the lives of all of us. That's our time. Thank you for joining us on The Markets.